They've watched Citizen Kane a combined 200 times. Elliot's first words were, "I personally thought the use of Dutch angles was derivative in the 400 blows." In Nathan's favorite historical figure is Fritz Lang. Now they're bringing that snootiness to you with Magellan's at the Movies.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome back, faithful listeners, men, women, children of all ages, to Magellan's at the Movies. I am your host, Elliot Mogeljines, anglicized as Magellan, joined as always by my co-host, my brother, my partner in crime, Nathan Mogeljines. Nathan, say hello to all the nice people.
Hello, nice people. And even if you're not a nice person, I'll say hello to you as well.
There you go. And this extending the hand of friendship to them is the first step on them becoming nice.
So that's true.
That's what we do here at Magellan's at the Movies. Anyway, Nathan, we're going to get started real quick here because we have a hotly anticipated episode for you today. Oh my gosh, the email has just been overflowing with correspondence to people being like, where's the best of the 90s list? Where is it? We want it now. Calm down, it's here. And I thought it would be fun, because this is the kind of thing that I find fun. If we talked a little bit about the historical context of the 90s. Yay! But no, I do actually think this is really interesting, because so far we've done the 2010s and the 2000s, the noughties, as they're called. And those were both very pessimistic, very turbulent eras. But I think that the 90s is probably the most optimistic period of human history that we will be touching on until we get to, like, I don't know, the 1900s.
the beginning of the century.
Yeah, because just think about it. The Soviet Union is dismantled. The Good Friday Agreement brokers peace between Ireland and the UK. South Africa ends apartheid. The civil rights movement continues apace. There's this legitimate sense that the liberal democratic order is becoming ascendant, and that is why you have, towards the beginning of the 90s, I think only a few years after the Soviet Union collapsed, there was a book written called The End of History and the Last Man about this idea that humanity had reached essentially its apotheosis, that authoritarianism was on its back foot, democracy was rising, and this was the end of, like, ideological political conflict. That didn't really work out, but for that time, for this period of 10 years, it really did seem like the Oslo Accords, that's another thing, was as close as we have ever come to a comprehensive peace deal between Israel and Palestine. So yeah, just a lot of great stuff happening in the 90s, and I will be interested to see, as we kind of work through these movies, to what extent, if at all, that kind of feeds down into entertainment. Because I definitely feel like in the noughties, you could see a lot, you could absolutely, in those movies, see the influence of 9/11, Afghanistan, all that kind of stuff. So, Nathan, do you looking at your list, can you see anything like that, or do you have any thoughts about the 90s?
Well, I think I would agree with a lot of things you said. I think you can look at some...
Well, I mean, some of those things were historical facts. It's not really something you can agree or disagree with.
Well, I agree that the tone was maybe a little more optimistic than it was for the 2000s. And if you think about the movies and the problems that the characters in the movies were facing... of, like, the classic 90s sort of films, you have like The Matrix, right? Which is this sort of idea where the world is kind of perfect, but the world being perfect is, right, a manifestation of aliens being in control of it. And you have things like Fight Club and American Beauty and Office Space, where it's like, dang, I have to go to my well-paying job, and what does that do to me emotionally and mentally? And I'm living, right, in America, where I can buy nice cars and buy all this stuff, so what does that do? Like, what is that sort of tone? So I think I would kind of agree, as well as looking at my list, at least. I've got a lot of pretty, you know, they're not all happy movies. There's a couple bummers on here, but I've got a lot of movies that are pretty fun, a rollicking good time, I would say, for a lot of these movies. And I would say, I think in general, a lot of the 90s was, we loved the stuff that came before. If you think of something like Forrest Gump, or something like Pulp Fiction, where it's very much reveling in the pop culture history of America to that point, in a way that is very, like, Forrest Gump is not really mired in the darkness of the times that he's living through. It's very much like, dang, wasn't that kind of fun? To its detriment, in my opinion, to start this off by, you know, dismissing a film that's not going to be on my top 15. But yeah, I don't know. That I think that's a little addressing. This is also the first decade that we're covering that is not a decade that either of us were really alive for. I mean, I was alive for 8 months of it, but I didn't do a lot. Can't recall much of that time.
Well, first of all, I think that's a really good point. Something that I hadn't considered about movies like American Beauty and the like, kind of seeing the rise of the modern malaise problem, the problem of the modern man. It's almost like humanity has reached a point collectively on Maslow's hierarchy of needs that they were like, or we were like, arrived at the problem of self-actualization now that the other needs were taken care of. Anyway, let's get started. Let's do it to it. Who wants to go first?
Elliot, you can go first. I think I went first for the 2000s. So you kick us off here.
All right. Well, once again, I have to note I have not managed to collect 15 movies because I just hate movies so much. I only have 14, but that's close. And number one is Jurassic Park. We've done a review of this. My feelings, the position of the prosecution has been made abundantly clear. I'm not going to add to it. I'm just going to say that Jurassic Park is a masterpiece. It's one of my favorite movies. It's definitely in my top 10 favorite movies of all time. And there may be some fisticuffs, a little bit of a dust up about its placement on the list.
This is just to list your 14, Elliot. You don't have to do any commentary for them yet. The commentary comes later.
Oh, really?
Gosh,
dang it. All right, my bad. That's my
bad. Because if I have Jurassic Park 2, then we'll do commentary
You're right.
On the list.
That was my fault. I'm sorry. I'm a little sick still. Let's restart. This is me rewinding. All right. So, number one, Jurassic Park, Schindler's List, Sesevenen, The Silence of the Lambs, The Shawshank Redemption, Scream, Fargo, The Hunt for Red October, L.A. Confidential, Men in Black, The Crow, Dead Man Walking, Boys in the Hood, and Falling Down.
Interesting. Wow, that's a really interesting list, Elliot. There's a couple on there that I was not expecting to see. I will also say we've made a bit of an error here. I have not seen Dead Man Walking.
Oh my god, I could have sworn that you had. I had this distinct, because I literally thought about reaching out to you about this, but I thought I had a distinct memory of you saying that you had watched it.
No, I think I had said that I wanted to watch it, because it was a movie I had seen, like, mentioned in a couple different places.
Wow, we really just can't get this right.
Hey, one of these, we've got a lot more decades. By the time we get to the 80s, this will be a real, we've both seen all of them. sort of thing. So that, I apologize for that. We should just start sharing our entire list beforehand.
Yeah.
But then I wouldn't get these surprises where, oh, you included some stuff I wouldn't have.
Well, let's just move on. Okay. Let's hear your list.
Well, my list, firstly, we do share 7, Silence of the Lambs, and The Shawshank Redemption. And then the ones that I have that you do not have is The Truman Show, Good Will Hunting, The Sixth Sense, Toy Story 2, Groundhog Day, Galaxy Quest, A League of Their Own, Quiz Show, Boogie Nights, Hoop Dreams, American Beauty, and Lahaine. All right, Elliot. So there's our personal list of our 15 or 14 favorite movies from the 90s. I had a moment today where I don't know if I was just being stupid, but in my head, I was looking at my list and I was like, oh, Elliot loves all of these movies too. We're not even going to have to do anything. Like, we're going to share 10 movies and then we'll briefly talk about the other 5 and then we'll move on. So I'm really, I mean, you know, I'm very surprised by some of the inclusions that you have on here, and I'm very interested. This is going to be as contentious an episode as I thought it was going to be. Because, yeah, we have 3 movies in common, so we have 7 spots that we have to argue about. Before we get to the arguing, let's start with the 3 movies that we have in common. We've done a review for all 3 of these, so I don't know if I really need to add a ton to those. I mean, The Shawshank Redemption is probably in my top 15 movies of all time. I would put it as my favorite movie of the 90s. I think it's fantastic. Everything we said in the review and everything, all of the reviews of this movie, I think are 100% true. 7 and Silence of the Lambs, I think are fantastic serial killer movies. And I recently saw Long Legs, which I think is okay, but is largely an exercise in style over any sort of like character or interesting philosophical commentary. And so I think going back to 7 and Silence of the Lambs, which are not just engrossing, incredibly well-done serial killer stories with great cinematography and great performances, they're both about interesting characters and interesting, you know, things happening. So these are 3 fantastic, fantastic movies. And if you want more of my thoughts on it, you can just listen into the reviews that we have on the channel for those movies.
I have nothing to add there. Those are 3, I would say, 3 of the better movies ever made. And absolutely watch them. If I had to pick a favorite movie of the 90s, I think it would be far and away Shawshank. That movie's just in another league of good.
It's so good. Oh, goodness. All right, well, now here's where we have to start arguing a little bit. So we're going to go back and forth, and we're just going to kind of share some of our reasoning for why we think this is one of the best movies of the 90s. And after we're done with it, we're going to veto the movies that we don't feel have a prayer of getting to the final list. And then we'll argue. We've got some means by which we're going to structure the arguing a little bit, but we're going to have to argue for 7 movies. So, Elliot, why don't you start us off with whatever movie you want to start this with?
All right. I'll start with Jurassic Park. We've done a review on this. I've made my position very clear. The world has made its position very clear. The film-going public has made its position very clear that this is one of the best movies of all time. It is in my top 10 favorite movies. It is one of those movies that just makes me believe in the power of movies. Like, it's one of those things. It's an experience that you can't get anywhere else. The awe and the thrills and the fun of Jurassic Park, and of course the artistry of the special effects, the animatronic dinosaurs. I mean, only a true fool could say that Jurassic Park does not deserve a place on the best of the 90s list.
Well, fools might be speaking later in this episode. This isn't the time to argue about things. You know, that's your opinion on Jurassic Park. That's fine. My first movie that I have on here that we don't share is I've got The Truman Show. I think I have two movies on here that I think are just a phenomenal premise. In this case, the premise of what if your entire life was a television show being dictated by other people. And I think this is just such a, I mean, if they stopped at the premise, this would be a pretty good movie. But they don't stop at the premise. They go all the way in depicting what would be required for a television show like that, what would be maybe the effects of the people inside of it. It's a really funny movie. I like all of the little product placement gags that they do throughout the film. I think this is probably my favorite Jim Carrey role that he's ever been in. It also has Ed Harris in a very small supporting role that is also fantastic. I think this is a movie that's aged phenomenally. It came out before, like, reality TV was a really big thing. So the fact that this movie exists and kind of has this idea of, like, you know, once you put a camera between you and a real human being having a real human experience, it's really easy for you to be like, haha, that's funny, and stop thinking about them as a human and start thinking about them as a character, which is something that I think has, again, aged phenomenally as we've moved forward in time. Elliot, you were talking when we did our best of the 2024 of how much you loved the final line in A Different Man. I think The Truman Show has another contender for me for best final line. When the movie ends and the two guys go, hey, what else is on? I think that's such a fun thing. So, The Truman Show is mine, one of my picks.
All right. Moving right along, I've got Schindler's List, another one that I don't need to say too much about. This is a movie also that I would put on the best movies of all time list. Yeah, I actually did end up saying a lot about Jurassic Park, so I am just going to cut it right there and say that and refer you to the review for more of my thoughts on Schindler's List. But yeah, I think it's one of the best movies ever made.
Well, I'm going to do the same thing for my next movie, which is Good Will Hunting. Again, a movie that we've covered on this podcast. I would say go and listen to that episode if you're too lazy to listen to that episode. I'd just say Good Will Hunting, one of the most amazing, life-affirming, well-written, well-acted, phenomenally put-together stories. I find it incredibly affecting, and I just think it's a generational film, in my opinion.
Dang. Holy cow. All right. My next one, it's not a movie that we've done a review for, but we have talked about it a lot, and one that we've done a review for one of its children, and that is the original Scream. I love Scream. In terms of horror movies, which I am on record as stating that I do not typically enjoy, I mean, Scream is just fun. It's just so much fun. Ghostface is a fantastic antagonist. I never get tired of seeing him get the snot kicked out of him. it's just in the right. It's got just the right amount of quirk to it, to the point where it's not overwhelming. But I feel like Scream, in a lot of ways, anticipated Marvel. If you think about it, in terms of the meta self-awareness, the referential humor. But I think that Scream does it so much better because Scream is much more sincere than Marvel ever has been. That Marvel, there's always cynicism and snarkiness to its meta self-awareness. But Scream, it's a very loving send-up of horror and slasher movies. It's got a great central character. I really like Sydney Prescott, and I just love her dynamic with Ghostface. It's got everything I want in a horror movie. Well, typically. That's there you go. Scream. Let's do it.
That's another example, not to, you know, pat ourselves on the back too much, but Scream is another example of a movie from the 90s very clearly owing, right? It's celebrating the pop culture of America up to that point. It is a send-up, but it is also a celebration in the same way that those other movies that I mentioned earlier. My next movie is another one that we've done a review for. The review was actually the reason this movie ended up on my list. I don't think I would have included it if I hadn't rewatched it for the podcast, and that's The Sixth Sense. Again, go back, listen to that episode. It's a really fun episode, too, because I think both of us enjoyed it way more than we were expecting to. And I just think it's fantastic. Again, it's very affecting. It is incredibly well made. It has amazing performances. It's scary. And I just find the central story of both Bruce Willis and the child to be such a compelling story of facing your fears and, you know, what it takes to kind of do some good in the world when that's a really scary, difficult proposition.
All right. Lovely. Next up, I have Fargo. We couldn't make a 90s list without the Coens. Shut up, Nathan. if you mosey on over to the blog, you'll see that I have a ranking of all the Coen brothers' movies, and in it, I say that Fargo is probably my favorite example of a classic Coen brothers' story structure, that being where a discouraged, frustrated everyman, very much someone suffering from modern malaise, makes a single bad decision that quickly snowballs out of their control and leads to consequences both hilarious and tragic. Everything I love about the Coens is here in this movie. The slightly off-kilter characters, the quirk that is like Scream, measured out such that it's not overwhelming. It does have a quiet tragedy to it that I really like, that to me enhances the comedic bits and the more lighthearted bits. It's got some great dark humor in it, and yeah, it is definitely like the quintessential Coen brothers movie.
Give me a second to readjust here, Elliot.
Whoa.
Yeah, sure. There's thoughts on that. Anyway, my next movie is going to be Toy Story 2. And this is another movie that I rewatched recently, which landed it on this list. I think it is such a fantastic action-adventure film. It's so much fun to watch these, you know, toys interact with the real world and find ways to navigate the real world in a way that is really exciting and fun to watch. I think the characters are so fantastic. This is a great example of a sequel finding interesting ways to develop characters that don't feel super manufactured and ridiculous. I particularly really love Woody in this movie, that I think his journey and the questions he has to struggle with as he goes through this film is really interesting, and he's a shockingly good, like, genuine character for a movie about, you know, living toys. I think, you know, I've praised Pixar in almost every one of these decades lists, but I think Toy Story 2 is a great example that they were not a flash in the pan. They made Toy Story. It was good. They made Toy Story 2, and it was clear they were here to stay. So I think it's so fantastic. It's also a touchstone of my childhood.
Interesting. Next up, I've got another one that can be quick. That's The Hunt for Red October. We have a review on this. This is also a mainstay of our childhood. And it's a movie that I've been able to appreciate more and more as I get older. Not just the fun action-y bit at the very end, but the whole sprawling spy thriller nature of it. Great movie. If you want to hear more, give that review a listen.
Wow, I love how much synergy we have in our these decade list episodes.
We like the movies we like.
It's true. Next one I'm going to do is I'm going to do Groundhog Day. This is a, kind of like The Truman Show. I think this is a fantastic premise, the time loop premise. And it's just done as good or better than anyone else has done it since. I think it is a role that Bill Murray was kind of born to play. This is, I don't think Bill Murray's a great actor, but I'm going to say this about a couple different actors in movies on my list. I don't think Bill Murray's a great actor, but I think if you pitch him a fastball, he can hit it out of the park, and this movie is a fastball for him. But there's so many amazing moments that I'm sure you've maybe seen discussed, such as when he's trying to save the old man, when he's trying to recreate a great moment from a previous time loop, and he's unable to because you can't recreate spontaneity like he wants to. It's such an interesting movie in terms of, just looking at the ways he's trying to find meaning in a place that feels meaningless, especially as the movie goes on. It's super funny. I think it's so fantastic. So yeah, it's on here. This is another movie, that I think speaks to that 90s thing of like, okay, we've solved everything else, now what?
Now we have to solve ourselves.
Yeah, solve our time loop.
Yes. All right, enough of that. My next movie is L.A. Confidential. This is a good movie. It always saddens me to think back and remember that it lost... What did it lose Best Picture to? Titanic?
Yeah.
Gosh dang it, James Cameron, you son of a gun. Titanic's fine. But L.A. Confidential, that's a great movie. This is actually one of my favorite memories of watching a movie with you, Nathan. The first time we watched this, I just remember we were really in sync. And there's a moment when a character does something really clever that I remember we were both like, oh! We got it immediately. But also, I just think it's a really great noir. Didn't I recommend this for Blade Runner 2049?
I believe you did, yes.
Okay. If I didn't, I should have. Because it's that same... It's operating on that same noirish appeal of the lone detective, or in this case, two lone detectives, up against the system, rooting out corruption. It's the classically cool characters, even if one of them is a little bit nerdy and one of them is a little bit violent. I think it's really good, really well constructed. It's got some fantastic payoffs to the mysteries of it all, and it's a movie that's very close to my heart.
Wow, that's so nice. It'll break my heart to veto it later.
I knew you were going to say that.
Just kidding. I don't know what I'm going to veto yet. Anyway, my next movie is Galaxy Quest. And this, I would say, this is a staple of my childhood just because our dad is a huge Star Trek fan. And Galaxy Quest is kind of a send-up of Star Trek and Star Trek tropes. I would say this is very similar to Scream in that it is self-referential, it's meta, it's making fun of things, but it is also very sincere. If this was just a normal Star Trek movie, it would be like the best Star Trek movie of all time. It's got a really great theme of being kind of pro nerds in the 90s, which I don't think nerds were huge in the 90s. This is another example of an actor who I don't think is particularly talented in Tim Allen just getting an absolute heater down the middle.
What are these words?
What do you mean?
What is a heater?
That's a fastball, Elliot. These are... I have two sports movies on my list. I'm a bit of a sports fan.
Okay.
Speaking of, shout outs, the Iowa Sportscaster of the Year, Jake Brent, who lovingly does our intro every week for our podcast.
Great work, Jake.
Anyway, yeah, Galaxy Quest, Tim Allen, amazing. Also, Alan Rickman is going way too hard as his character. It is such a funny movie. There's so many quotes in here that still come to mind every time someone says miners, anything about like mining or miners. I think miners, not miners. It really cracks me up. And again, it's, I think a lot of, I would agree with you, Elliot, that a lot of modern meta things are too snarky, and they're really just saying like, hey, isn't this stupid, with no amount of like, but here's something else that's neat. Like, there's no replacement for the thing they're making fun of. They're just standing there saying like, hey, isn't this moronic? And it's like, great, dude, you're really contributing to people's happiness with that. Galaxy Quest is like, hey, is it kind of stupid that they have giant choppers in their ship for no reason? For sure. But they're also like, isn't it kind of neat that, you know, television shows can inspire us to do good in the real world and, like, change the way we see ourselves? And I think that's kind of cool.
Yeah. A lot of modern stuff is saying, essentially, isn't it stupid to care about this?
Yeah.
Which is, hurts my fifis.
Yeah, I care about the, I care.
I care.
Anyway.
All right. Next up, we've got Men in Black. I don't think I've ever talked about my appreciation for the original Men in Black before. But basically, it's just a really good comedy. If you didn't know, which there's a chance you might not know because it's not the biggest thing in the world, it's about a secret organization that kind of monitors aliens living amongst humanity to try to keep the secret of aliens secret. Will Smith and Tommy Lee Jones are the classic odd couple, but I think their dynamic really works. There's not a whole lot else to say beyond I just find it really funny, but I also do think it does have that classic scene that everyone likes to talk about where Tommy Lee Jones, or Kay, explains the thinking behind keeping aliens secret from humanity and says, a human is smart, a person is smart, people are dumb, panicky creatures, and you know it. And I do think that is very, that's very good. But yeah, it's just generally a really, it's just a fun movie. It's just a fun movie, man.
Wow. What did I say? The 90s? We had fun movies. These are fun movies.
They are.
This is the movie I was most surprised to see you include on the list. That's how little you've talked about your fondness for it.
Oh, okay.
Even I was surprised.
I've been keeping it secret because you just can't know about it, Nathan. You'll be too panicky.
Funny. My next movie is A League of Their Own. This is, I'm assuming most people here have heard the iconic quote from the movie, "There's no crying in baseball." But couched around that one quote that took off for, you know, no sort of reason, is a really, really fantastic movie about a bunch of people trying to do something they love in circumstances that were subpar, to say the best. Put it kind of kindly. It's the kind of movie that I really love, where it's just a story that I find very interesting, and there's nothing really going on that's deeper than it, although I do think it says some things about, women trying to do things, and specifically trying to do things in areas that are typically male-dominated. But it's just such a great movie. It's got so many great side characters who are really funny and enjoyable to be around. It's got Tom Hanks in a great role as a character in an arc that I love, where it's like, they're kind of a gruff jerk at the beginning, and at the end they're like a slightly less gruff but still a jerk, which I think is very funny, and I think very you know, true to life, that most people don't make a full 180. Most people are lucky to make like a 75 degree turn from what they're doing. This movie also features, to quote the line that the screenwriter thinks should have taken off instead of "There's no crying in baseball," it has the line near the end where Tom Hanks tells someone that she says she's going to quit because it's gotten too hard, and he says, "It's supposed to be hard. That's what makes it great. If it was easy, everyone could do it." Which I think, much like the humans are panicky animals, I think it's a very poignant line. I think it's a great movie. It's also got an incredible score. I think the score is by Hans Zimmer or something.
It is.
Okay, it's an amazing... It is not like any other Hans Zimmer score. It's like a jazzy score. It's so fun and so amazing. And yeah, I just think this movie is a ton of fun and really just a great time.
All right.
I also love sports.
That's great, Nathan. Moving on. My next movie is The Crow. The Crow's kind of been in the news recently with its less than stellar remake, starring Bill Skarsgård, of all people, who was in a terrible movie and a great movie in Nosferatu. So that's fun. But I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the original, The Crow. This is a movie about... it's based on a comic. It is a comic book movie, albeit a less read one than your Batman's or your Superman's or your Iron Man's. It's about a man who is killed alongside his girlfriend and then brought back to life as the Crow to wreak terrible vengeance on the people who wronged him. I chose this because, honestly, I think that it's a fantastic action movie. There's a lot of really good fight scenes in it. It's got a cool, broody main character. What's his name? Brendan Lee? Isn't that it?
Yeah, plays the main character, yeah.
Yes, who tragically died during the filming of it. Honestly, it is definitely recognizable as a comic book movie, but it's much more adult, I think, in the way that it's all, I don't know, conceptualized. That Eric Draven, the main character, and that is a terrible name, you are correct. I think that the approach to Eric Draven as a character is similar to the approach to characters as we find in Watchmen, in that it's much more honest about, okay, what would being in this situation actually do to a person? It's also, I mean, someone on the Dark Knight team watched this movie when they were making the character of Joker, because the look and the sense of humor, it's all there. But I think that's fun. And also, it's just a lot more gothic and kind of surreal than your average comic book movie, which I found really refreshing. It represents a model of comic book films that I wish we would have taken up rather than what ended up happening.
That's fair. I think that's all very true. My next movie is Robert Redford's Quiz Show, which is maybe... might be the least seen movie I have on my list. So it's about the quiz show scandal of like the 60s, 70s, something like that, where it turned out that quiz show, a very famous quiz show, was feeding its contestants the answers and kind of gaming the system to have more charismatic people stick around for longer to keep ratings up. And I think this movie is just a fantastic morality play, and I especially love morality plays when the stakes get lower and lower and the movie is still making the statement like, hey, even if the only thing you're doing is like a little white lie, that still matters because it represents who you are, you're the character, the type of person that you are. And so I think this is a fascinating movie of watching characters interact with this question of, you know, would you tell a little white lie for fame and recognition and money and even, like, the ability to make some positive actions in society, or at least what you see as could be positive actions. I think it is really great. It has Ralph Fiennes in a fantastic role as the main character. This is a guy who can act and is given a fastball down the middle here. So it's such a great movie. It also features a cameo from Martin Scorsese is really neat, which is really neat. And it has one of my favorite endings of all time. And I'm not going to spoil it here because I really do think everyone should go and see this movie, because I think it's a movie that maybe does – I've never seen it talked about in many circles. So I would say go and watch it. I think it is so, so interesting. And I don't know, watch it and then think about, hey, would you lie on TV for money? And then, you know, think about that. Really sit at that question. Because I have.
Yeah, and the answer is yes.
Yeah, the answer is in a heartbeat.
All right. That's interesting. Anyway, next up we've got the movie that's doomed to die, and that's Dead Man Walking. The movie that's doomed to die, that's actually a tasteless joke.
I was going to say.
That was unintentional. This is a movie, it's based on a true story about a nun who essentially tries to connect with a prisoner on death row. And I think it is one of the more sensitive handlings of this highly controversial topic. I feel like its approach is very even-handed, but even setting all that aside, I think it's a really compelling and oftentimes tragic story about the choices that we make, the need for consequences for those choices, as well as redemption, the role of religion in all of this, grounded by some great performances by the main leads. I don't want to say too much, because if Nathan is going to watch it, I don't want to give it all away, but those are the reasons why I really enjoy it and why I thought it should be on the list.
That's so fair. I wonder what it would have been like if I had seen it.
What might have been.
Speaking of movies that are doomed to fail, I have here PTA's Boogie Nights. Once again, I keep mentioning actors who aren't particularly capable, who get dealt a, you know, pocket aces here. That's a poker reference for you people. Mark Wahlberg is not a great actor. This is an incredible, incredible movie for him. I actually rewatched it just a couple days ago to confirm my feelings on this movie, and they did confirm my feelings on this movie. This is an immaculately put together movie. It looks incredible. It is so, so well shot. There's so many amazing one-ers in this film showing all of these different characters, and it's such an interestingly structured film that I saw in reading reviews of this, I saw a lot of people calling it a rise and fall. It's not a rise and fall. It's a cyclical movie with the biggest consequences of the film coming kind of in the middle of the movie, that only one character really sees the fullest consequences of the life they're living. And most of the other characters end the movie in a pretty nice spot. And I think that making that choice structurally is so amazing, because you can show some of the consequences of these vapid, stupid people and how their living isn't ever going to bring them the satisfaction and the meaningful things that they're looking for in the world. But then you don't have to follow this same tired structure of, like, look at them be happy, now look at them be sad. It's also a stupidly funny movie. There's so many great... The thing that I found really funny and most recently is John C. Reilly, when the guy goes, yeah, well, that sounds like a YP, not an MP, my problem. And he's like, I don't know about all this technical jargon, YP, MP, I've never heard of it. They're just so dumb, and I find it so, so funny. It's so well put together. I know Elliot's going to veto this because he doesn't like the movie, but it's so fun, and I think it's fantastic. Not to speak for you, Elliot.
Well, anyway, I'm not even gonna dignify that with a response. Next up, I've got Boys N the Hood. This is one of those movies that actually I watched to see if it could be on this list when I was trying to fill out the list. And I was really surprised by it. It is very similar to movies that you've probably seen before, in that it just follows a group of people as they navigate life. This time, a group of young African-American men living in the hood, or the ghetto, a bad part of town. Probably the most well-known actor here is Lawrence Fishburne, as well as Cuba Gooding Jr., and then Ice Cube's also there, which is interesting. But, yeah, I don't know. I'm not 100% sure what it is about this realization of the formula that I felt was just a lot more empathetic and a lot more, gentle than a lot of other movies like this that can feel like just a little bit exploitative. This movie felt much more, I don't know, it just felt more tender, despite the many problems that are happening in it. And also, I just really like movies and stories about fathers and sons. And this movie has that as kind of its core. So, there you go.
Interesting. I've got here, my next movie is also about some people living in the inner city, and that's going to be the documentary Hoop Dreams. We haven't talked a lot about documentaries on this podcast, but I included it because I think it is just an incredibly, incredibly engrossing look at the insanely granular detail that these documentarians go into for... it's the story of these two African-American kids in the inner city who both have dreams of becoming professional basketball stars. And it was originally conceived as a, like, 30-minute special on private schools exploiting the dreams of students like this and then saddling their families with huge amounts of debt when it turns out they're not as good as they think they could be. And it turned into a 7-year project as they followed these two kids through pretty much all of middle school and high school and show what their journey does. And I think it's so fantastic. I think while there are so many ideas that get brought to the surface over the course of this movie, which is like 3 hours long, I think the biggest thing that came to my mind as I watched it was just how much of these different layers of, you know, the parents wanting the best for their children and wanting to support a dream while also having to, you know, balance that with the fact that they don't have the financial means to support it. They have siblings who have, like, already gone through the same thing and seen that, you know, this is not necessarily a path that's going to lead to success. The movie is just done with so much, kind of like you said, Elliot, so much gentleness and human, like, zooming in on the human experience. And I think it's fantastic. And I am not a huge sports person, even though I joked earlier that I am. But every time it showed, like, a basketball game in this movie, I was on the edge of my seat because I just so desperately wanted things to work out and for, you know, good things to happen to these people, which fortunately they've all ended up in pretty good places since the release of this movie. But I'm including it. Roger Ebert considered it one of the best movies of the 90s, and who am I to disagree with Roger Ebert?
I find it very easy to disagree with Roger Ebert.
What?
Anyway, my last movie, number 14, that's going to be Falling Down, which I have recommended before, although I can't remember what the movie was.
I can't either.
But this is definitely one of those movies where you can see just the modern malaise creeping in as the middle class bloats, as more and more people become what you might consider middle class. And more people find themselves stagnating in their positions. The fulfillment, or lack thereof, that people get from the 9-to-5 grind is increasingly called into question. We get movies like Falling Down, which is about a single man who basically loses it. He just decides that he's had enough of it. And it's about him going on kind of rampage as he tries to make his way back home. And along the way, he's being pursued by a police officer on the verge of retirement. Classic. We learn more and more about him. And the movie really, really unfolds both in terms of that its characters are realized and the way that its themes are realized, that the sympathy that you have for the main character increasingly comes at odds with his ever more violent responses. The movie has a lot on its mind about industrial society, about the 9-to-5 grind, but aside from that, it's just really, really entertaining, and it's got a fantastic central performance by Michael Douglas. So let's go Falling Down.
All right, well, my last two, I can kind of speed through one of them because it's American Beauty, which is, I think, all of the things you just said, Elliot. The modern man facing the modern malaise. A great performance by Kevin Spacey. A great performance, really, by everyone. I think this is a fantastic movie in my mind, not just because it stunningly brings forward all of these things that we've kind of been talking about, these questions of, you know, okay, I'm doing okay, but how do I feel about that? Like, what am I doing? Am I happy? And I think it culminates in one of the best scenes that has just stuck in my mind ever since I've saw this movie like 4 or 5 years ago, where a character just asks someone like, hey, how are you doing? And they have a genuine human moment of like caring about each other. And I think the amount of sympathy this movie has for all of its characters, I think, is so fantastic, as all of them are kind of behaving badly in different ways, and how much this movie says about what American success and what American beauty looks like, I think, is really fantastic. I'm pretty sure this was Sam Mendes' first movie, so what on earth? Also, you didn't mention it, but Boys in the Hood was directed by someone who is 23, Elliot. That's how old you are.
Dang.
Isn't that crazy? Anyway, the last movie on my list is La Haine, which is a French film following three French compadres as they kind of spend the day going around Paris waiting to hear news on a friend of theirs who has been a victim of police brutality and is in the hospital for his wounds. They're waiting to hear what his state is going to be. This is simultaneously one of the most like fun movies, in that it's kind of fun to hang out with these characters, and I think the way they're written is super amazing, and the way they interact with each other is very realistic and has so much life to it, while also being one of the most stressful movies of all time, because it constantly reminds you that all of this that you're watching is counting down to something, and that there's only so long. There's a joke that they tell in the movie about a guy falling off a skyscraper, where as he passes floors, he says, "So far, so good, so far, so good." The joke being that you're so far, so good until it's not how you fall that matters, it's how you land. And landing, falling off a skyscraper is bad. And the whole movie is just this idea of you know, we go about our lives and we're like, hey, so far so good, everything's going great. But when you're in a place like these characters are in, this, you know, this bad part of Paris, this bad neighborhood, there's only so long that you can be so far so good until you hit the sidewalk, so to speak. And I think it's amazing. The movie balances these tones really well. And even knowing how the movie end, I was still caught off guard by how it ended. I don't want to spoil it, because I think if you haven't seen it, you definitely should, although I'm sure you could infer some of the things that happen. But it is just such a great, bracing film, in my opinion. All right, Elliot. Well, now it's time for the tough part. In the past, we've done a certain number of vetoes. I think for this, since we have 7 spots that we have to fill, we need to winnow this down. So I say veto everything that does not have a prayer of being on the final top 10 list for you.
Wow. Do you want me to just go through it, like, all at once?
Yeah, you can just go through it all at once and, you know, give some... explain to me why you don't think I'm right.
Explain yourself.
Yeah.
Okay, so let me just get my crossing out pencil.
Okay.
Number one to go is Boogie Nights. Get it out of there. I hate Boogie Nights. That movie is just... It's just too much, man. It's just overwrought. And also, the characters are so annoying that I don't really care about their cycles, their cyclical lives. Next up, A League of Their Own. Get it out of there. I don't know. I do not like A League of Their Own. I don't hate it, but I found it to be very... Just kind of uninteresting and very light. Very breezy. Not a lot of fat on it. Not a lot of meat on it. Hmm. Next up, we have Hoop Dreams. I thought this was interesting for 2 hours, but 3 hours is a lot. And it was interesting to hear you talk about the things about, like, it being about the exploitation of private schools and the like, because... I noticed that, of course, but the people, the documentary never really circled back on that. I didn't think it never really emphasized it. So I was actually struggling to think, like, okay, so what is this about, really? What am I supposed to be taking away from this? Because documentaries, or a lot of documentaries, especially this one, I feel, are trying to affect some kind of change, if not in the world, then in their viewers. And I didn't really see what this one was trying to do. For as compelling as I found it at times, which I did. Next up, I'm going to veto Groundhog Day. I like Groundhog Day, don't get me wrong. But I have never really found it. I have never really seen the heart to it. Maybe it's because I just feel like it's too comedic, or that Phil is too consistently abrasive, and his heel turn always felt like a little bit of a heel turn to me. That I for me, it was always just like a fun, yeah, nice movie, but not one that I'm ever like. It's a movie that I'm always happy to rewatch, but it's never one that I choose to rewatch myself. I think I'll leave that for now.
All right, well, Elliot, I have good news and bad news for you.
Okay, hold on a second.
The bad news is...
Hold on a second, because I have to cross all these off. Okay, go ahead.
The bad news is I am going to veto Jurassic Park.
You son of a biscuit! That is the most... That is insane. I think that you should go to jail for that.
As I kind of said, and I was thinking about this more today, because I knew you were going to put it on here, and so I was like, I know I'm going to have to defend, like you said, a stance that is not commonly held in the film community. And I just think the thematic elements of the movie aren't interesting enough or present enough for me to really enjoy it in that vein, in the same way that I enjoy something like Blade Runner, where the thematic elements are really strongly present in almost every moment of the movie. So then I would have to go to, you know, what most I enjoy most about most of Spielberg's movies, where it is the blockbuster fun. And the bare facts of it is it takes like 40 minutes to an hour for Jurassic Park to become a blockbuster popcorn movie. And, you know, I'm well aware that this is not a feeling that everyone shares, and we had this argument when we did the podcast review of this, but I'm just saying, if Star Wars took 40 minutes before anything interesting or exciting to happen, I would not like Star Wars. You know, you can't be a fun blockbuster popcorn movie if you take forever to get started. And so that, you know, that it genuinely, I'm not being funny here, I'm not trying to be mean, this is actually a compliment. You've chosen a lot of really great movies, Elliot. There's not any movie on here that I'm like, I undoubtedly hate it. So this is a compliment when I say Jurassic Park is my least favorite movie of all of the movies that we're talking about in this episode.
That's the most embarrassing thing I've ever heard. I can't believe you had the shamelessness to say that, to have that recorded and immortalized on the internet forever.
I feel like this is a bit of a turn from what usually. I feel like usually I'm the one who's having to defend like a cinematic classic, and you're the one who's like, yeah, I just don't get it. I'm not, you know, and I have to be like, no, dude, everyone loves this. In the Mood for Love is a 21st century classic.
All right. Just continue.
The good news is I'm going to move Falling Down onto the top 10 list.
Wow.
I watched this last night. The only reason it's not on my list is because I had already made my list. I agree with everything you said. I think this movie is fantastic. I think I have one little quibble with it, but it's kind of a spoiler thing, so I'll just tell you after the episode if you're...
I can't wait.
But I think in general, there's a lot of movies like this about, right, men snapping or someone kind of snapping, and I think this movie is one of the best examples of it. I think Michael Douglas does an amazing job. I love all of the scenes of him, like, not being cool and being late. Like, when he accidentally fires the gun in the fast food restaurant. I think this movie does such an amazing job of making sure that the main character doesn't look cool and making sure that the audience understands, like, hey, this is not real. Like, he might be saying some things that you relate to or empathize with. He's not, like, his actions are not something that we want everyone to be going with. And I just thought it was so interesting. I thought Robert Duvall's character was such a fascinating and amazing counterpoint to Michael Douglas's, and I thought the end final scene was amazing, was just incredible, and had so many lines that I was like, man, both the delivery and the line itself were fascinating and really, you know, affected me quite a bit, moved me. So yeah, Falling Down, that was the good news, Elliot, is I'm moving Falling Down up.
Okay, what? You're supposed to be vetoing things.
Well, I'm about to. Okay, so then Men in Black, I'm also going to veto, and I just don't, you know, it's good. I enjoy Men in Black quite a bit. I just don't have as much fun with it as you do, I guess. I don't know. It's an all right movie.
Farewell, Men in Black, Mia Moore.
Okay, Dead Man Walking, because I haven't seen it. You know, one of these days we'll get this thing right.
Yes.
The last one I'm going to veto is going to be L.A. Confidential.
Oh my gosh, have mercy, man!
I feel bad since you've talked so how much you enjoyed watching this for the first time with me, because this is actually a movie that I think I've enjoyed less the further away I've gotten from it and kind of the more noir movies I've watched where I'm like, eh, this is just kind of another noir movie. Again, you chose a great list. All of these are really great movies. But when I'm thinking about, you know, do they have an argument to be in the top 10 of the 90s? For me, I really like L.A. Confidential. And if this was like a top 20, I think I would include it. If this was a top 30, for sure, it's making it in there. In a top 10, I don't think it's, I don't know. I don't think it has enough stuff that's unique and interesting in the noir sort of sphere to bump it up for me. Although it does, in my opinion, this is one of the best cast movies of all time. I mean, both in terms of the cast is very talented and the way your assumptions about each cast member plays against the story that you're being told, I think is fantastic. But I am unfortunately going to have to veto it.
See, that just hurts my feelings.
Okay, I didn't make any of these comments when you were vetoing my movies.
I know. I just wanted to do the quote from Uncharted 4 because I like that. See, that just hurts my feelings.
See?
All right, well, you've absolutely gutted my list.
I removed the same number of things that you've removed from my list.
I know, but mine... Okay, whatever.
But I like mine more.
I know, I do. I like mine more.
Well, obviously.
Anyway, it's time now for us to take a little break, because we're going to rank these, and then we'll hash it out. So, let's begin.
Yeah, to be clear, we still have 6 spots, which I think is the most we've ever had going into... I think usually when we go into this section, it's like, we have 3 or we have 2. 6? This is going to be brutal.
All right. Well, first of all, I just want to address what you said earlier about expecting this to be an easy episode. So I just want to say, if it seems like I've ranked my movies like higher than yours, there is like all of these movies that you've listed that are remaining, that is, with the exception of Lehane, which of course I hadn't seen until recently, are all movies that as I was preparing my list I did look at, but all of them were, or most of them were, movies that I was like, yeah, that's pretty good, but not something that I was like, oh, obviously that's like the best of the decade.
Well, I mean, it is kind of unfair of us to do this ranking sort of thing, since obviously we rank our own movies in general above these other ones, because if we didn't, we would have put them on our own list. So this is where we let compromise and, yes, you know, taking into account maybe some things other than just your own subjective feelings.
Well, there's also room for being convinced. I mean, I was convinced about Chicago in the last episode, yeah, just for an example.
You know, good job, Elliot, way to be convinced. All right, so you can share your first one. Talk more about Schindler's List.
Oh, you son of a gun. Schindler's List, I don't have anything to add to what I said in the review. I think this is such a beautiful movie that does not, absolute, in my opinion, does not skimp on the true horror of, like, this is set in what is, in all likelihood, the most appalling crime in human history, which just makes it so much more impactful. Like, as a historian, this movie just hits so hard, seeing all these things that I've read about, like the liquidization of the Warsaw Ghetto. I don't know. It's like, I'm struggling to come up with words. This is a movie that I think it's a movie that's well done, more than well done. It's an important movie. I think that everyone should watch this at least once in their lifetime. Schindler's List. There it is.
Yeah, I have Schindler's List in, like, the middle of my ranking, so we can leave it in, and we can, you know, I don't know how much more discussion there's going to be. I'm kind of waiting to see where other things fall in terms of stuff we might agree on closer than Schindler's List.
All right, I'm putting it in the maybe list.
Okay. I've shared in the podcast, again, I don't disagree with any of the things you're saying. I've shared in the podcast on the episode where we reviewed this, some of my qualms with this movie, some of the scenes that I take issue with, some of the moments that I think aren't as great. But I don't deny it. It's a fantastic movie. It's incredibly well done. All of the movies that are left on here, I think, are fantastic. All of the movies that I cut were just movies that I'm like, eh, they're not, I don't think they really, you know, they don't fit that vibe for me, where I'm like, yeah, this is a masterwork by a master director. Anyway, my first one, let's see if you could have predicted this, fella. My favorite movie from the movies remaining is Quiz Show. And
whoa. That is not what I predicted.
Well, I'm a sucker for these sorts of movies because I really, and, you know, this is a very subjective thing, but movie watching is subjective. I'm just nutty about movies that are like, hey, how you operate in the world always matters. There is never a moment where the moral decisions you face are a meaningless moral decision. And so, again, the fact that this is such a low stakes question of morality makes it just more interesting for me to see these characters go through that and wrestle through that. And there's so many great performances in this besides just Ralph Fiennes. I really like the guys who play the heads of the company, and I think it's a movie that, kind of like the Truman Show, it came before media maybe got as big as some of the people in the 90s were thinking media would get. So I think it's a movie that continues to be very resonant with me, at least, and all of the other Quiz Show fans out there. There's dozens of us. that it still resonates that, you know, this disgusting sort of idea that the media can just screw us over and then say, like, hey, why are you even upset? Like, just stop consuming it if it doesn't matter. I think that continues to be a very relevant sort of thing that is frustrating for people. So Quiz Show is my favorite from the ones that are left.
Wow. Nathan, this is number 10 of 14 for me.
Oh!
And, I mean, maybe it's just been too long since I've seen Quiz Show, but I have seen it a few times, and every time I was just like, yeah, this is pretty good. This is pretty good. But that's all I can say for it. I don't have any specific problem with it. It's just that I don't find it as compelling. Fun fact, I work in an archive, so I work with a lot of old newspapers. Oh, yeah. And I actually came across a series of articles about this scandal. And I can safely say that none of these real people look anything like their on-screen counterparts.
What?
The guy who, honestly, I think they kind of did the main guy, Charles Van Doren, they did him a little dirty, because Ralph Fiennes is, he's not a bad looking man, but the actual Charles Van Doren, he's handsome. He's a handsome looking guy.
Funny. Okay, well, do you want to keep it in the maybe, or do you just want to cut? 10 is really low. That's a pretty big gap.
We can keep it if you want.
No, we can cut it. All right. This is awful. You know, you don't even have the respect to say, yes, Nathan, cut it. You make me cut my beloved movie?
Sorry. All right. Sorry. I say we should cut it.
I'm just joshing with you, friend. All right. Well, what's...
Well, maybe you'll be more pleased with my number two, because that's American Beauty. And I would have no problem with putting it on the list right now.
Okay, well, yeah, that's very high up for me as well, so let's do it.
Awesome. I have nothing to add to what Nathan said. The only reason it wasn't on my list is because I didn't think of it. So.
Wow, that's funny. Wow. Thank goodness. Now we have two Best Picture winners on our list.
Nice.
All right. My third one, well, maybe you'll be pleased with... Oh, wait. My second one. Never mind. You won't be pleased with this one. My second one is Galaxy Quest.
Interesting. Go ahead and talk about it.
Yeah, like I said, I think this is a type of movie that I think is in short supply. I'm not going to say they don't make movies like this anymore, but it's been a while since I saw a movie like this in theaters that, again, like Scream, it's a send-up of a genre that clearly loves the genre it's sending up. And it's above Scream for me because I love science fiction more than I like horror movies, so... I think it's ideas of, you know, science fiction media being something that lifts us all up and makes us believe in a better society and a better way forward. I find that very compelling. And again, it's just so funny. It might genuinely be one of my favorite comedies of all time. And it might be the movie I find funniest of all time. I think Sam Rockwell is so insanely funny in this movie. I just die. Everything his character does is hilarious to me. And, yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's just because I watched it a ton as a kid, but I love this movie so much. And every time I revisit it, I like it even more.
All right. So that is number five for me.
Oh.
So decently high up there. I find this movie really funny. I think it's really compelling. I think it's definitely got the heart that you're talking about. And maybe even if I rewatched it, like right now, it would shoot higher up the list. But as it is, honestly, the only thing that's holding it back is that there's just other stuff that I like more. So, I'm willing to put this on the maybe list in a safe position on the maybe list, just to let us,
let's do that. We've still got five spots left. I mean, we've got a long ways to go.
Well, that's why you need to stop having these little interjections. You need to just keep moving. Galaxy Quest. There you go.
All right.
My number three is Fargo. I just love Fargo. I think that this is the Coen Brothers movie to end all other Coen Brothers movie. Even though it's not my personal favorite, I think that it is the best distillation of their style. And I just love their modern tragicomedies. I've always thought that there was something very Shakespearean, almost Victorian in the way they, characters in their movies, and particularly in Fargo, will inevitably get their comeuppance. Like, that is a very Victorian idea that that your sins will inevitably ruin you. It's just that in this movie, as in a lot of their other movies, it's not just you who gets ruined because of it. And yeah, it's entertaining. It's funny. It's great. I love it.
Well, Elliot, you're going to be in a really good mood for a bit here. Fargo is number four for me. So
wow.
I would be more than happy to put Fargo. Oh, actually it is number four. I can't count. I'd be more than happy to move it on the list. That feels like we have a consensus here. I agree with everything you said. This is the most Coen Brothers movie. I think, yeah, its sense of justice is so interesting to me. Again, to go back to Quiz Show, the idea that, like, hey, everything you do matters, even if it's kind of like small things, those, like, small missteps still deserve some form of justice. I wouldn't go as far as to do the justice that's in Fargo, where everyone dies for everything. I think one thing you haven't highlighted yet that I would love to highlight is this movie is so funny. So funny. Steve Buscemi is amazing as the most hapless criminal on the face of the planet. William H. Macy, I didn't get to talk about him for Boogie Nights, so I'll talk about him here. He plays pathetic characters so well and so compellingly. He's amazing in this. The scene near the end where Marge is talking to the guy and asking him questions is so funny to me, where he's like just telling this long rambly story and then just ends it super abruptly. Yeah. And she's like, oh, so that's what happened, eh? That's a terrible Minnesota accent. I apologize. But yeah, Fargo's amazing. Fargo's really great.
Well, alrighty then. Now I'm in a really good mood.
Well, you're about to be in a better mood because my number three is Boys in the Hood.
Wow. I was not expecting that.
I lived a surprise. You're so easy for me to read. I'm inscrutable to you, Elliot.
That's true. Well, talk about Boys in the Hood.
Yeah, I this is another movie that I watched recently that maybe that had a chance of making my list. If I had seen it earlier, I would agree with everything that you said. This is a fantastic coming-of-age movie. This is another movie that, like a lot of the movies we've talked about, owes a lot to previous movies. There's very clearly influences from Stand By Me, American Graffiti, other classic sort of coming-of-age movies. But I think the biggest thing that really stuck out to me was, like you said, Elliot, this is kind of classic sort of characters and classic sort of settings. And what really impressed me about this movie is how well it avoided stepping into cliches. I think Ice Cube's character is the best example of that. That I think in a lot of other movies, Ice Cube's character, Doughboy, as he's called in the movie, falls into a bit of a cliche where they just keep doing things that make no sense and are frustrating for us, the viewer, to watch, because you're just like, hey, please make a good decision. Like, stop being a moron. And I think Doughboy is so fantastic because I never felt that towards him. I was so consistently empathizing with his struggle, and my heart was going out to the place he was in and what he was trying to do. There's a scene near the end where just the delivery of one curse word from Ice Cube kind of broke me, because I thought it was such a heart-wrenching reaction to what the character was reacting to. So I was just really impressed by how the movie avoided cliches and just was able to create such three-dimensional, amazing characters.
All right. This is... it's kind of interesting. You have that higher than I do.
Oh, really?
I have it at number 8.
Wow.
And obviously, like, I'm not going to speak against my own pick. Again, it's just that there are things above it, so...
we can move it to the maybe.
Sure. Let's move it to the maybe.
All right. Got 4 left. 3 in the maybe column. Okay. All right.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. My list is all messed up.
Oh no.
All right, I'll figure that out later. Anyway, so what we're on number 4, right?
Yeah.
All right, number 4 is Scream. I just love Scream so much. I think it's so funny. It is so much fun. Like, this is the most fun that I've ever had with a horror movie, because usually I just can't get into the fun horror movies like Friday the 13th. Or Nightmare on Elm Street. But this movie has the right tone, I think, to let me have fun with it. And yeah, just Ghostface is so funny. I love the borderline slapstick humor in his the chase scenes. Just a big Scream fan.
Yeah, this is like 12 of 14 for me.
Whoa, ouch.
I think we've talked about Scream before, and I've said I'm on record that I'm a Scream 4 guy before I'm a Scream 1 guy. So yeah, and it's not anything where, like, there's something objectively, like, awful with the movie or something super objectionable that I have a giant issue with. I think it's a really fun movie. I think it's really good. I think it's, again, not the best, or at least not the... I think it's hard to rewatch Scream with the same mindset as someone in the 90s rewatched Scream, which is part of the reason why I put Scream 4 above it, because it was really easy for me to watch it with the mindset of someone who would have seen it on release, because so little of that had been spoiled for me as compared to Scream, that I was so intimately familiar with every twist and turn. And I've never been able to watch the movie with that sort of fresh eyes of really enjoying every little piece of the film, which I think has kept it from being as high up for me. I don't think it's bad, but yeah, it's very low. I'd say let's cut it now.
I mean, that breaks my heart, but all right, if it's that low, yeah, we can cut it. Man, that's tough. I think that's, well, obviously Jurassic Park is the one that I'm most sorry to see go, but that's an easy second.
Wow. I'm sorry about that. You haven't had any cuts that really have broken my heart yet. Not like Still Walking. That took me off guard. That was tough for me to sit through. These are,
well, the movie these are bad,
hard.
So.
These are hard episodes to make, Elliot. These are just bad.
Why are we doing this?
Anyway, my next movie would have been American Beauty, but we've already moved that up. So it's going to be The Sixth Sense.
Wow.
Man, Elliot, what did you think I liked?
I don't know.
Anyway, like I said before, I think it's fantastic. I think it is so, it's such an amazing blend of horror and drama in a way that I don't think has ever been matched. I think a lot of the movies I have on here are kind of amazing tight wire acts of balancing tones. And The Sixth Sense, in my opinion, is probably the best example of that in all of these.
Okay.
Well, we got to start moving this along faster.
No, that's fine. The Sixth Sense is, this is definitely, I did not mean to put it here. Okay, so I'm just going to have to keep track of this myself to know what I've moved around. The Sixth Sense is number 9 for me.
Oh, man.
And I gave it a really strong review. I did really like it. It's just that I liked other things more. Mm. So yeah, I wouldn't be opposed to putting this on the maybe list.
No, we have too many things on the maybe list. We got to be stricter about what we're adding to the maybes.
Okay.
I'm really hoping that this middle section here is where we start to have a lot of unity.
Okay. So we're cutting The Sixth Sense.
Yeah, we can cut The Sixth Sense.
All right. Well, number 5 for me was Galaxy Quest. That is currently on the maybe list. Number 6 is The Hunt for Red October. So 5 and 6 is kind of like the classic movies of our childhood. Yeah, I just think that this is such a, what did we say, muscular movie. But it's, yeah, it's just a very movie-y movie. It's not necessarily like deep or intellectual, but it's just really satisfying. It's just such a good, like, extended, protracted game of cat and mouse. And I love the special effects and the submarine battles. I think we said in our review, they've somehow managed to make incredibly clumsy, slow-moving vessels just the height of excitement.
This is actually 6th for me as well. This is...
Wow.
We're right. Well, 6th or 7th. I've lost count of these things. It's in a similar vicinity. And so I think us being on the same page on this, I say let's move it over to the list.
All right. The Hunt for Red October. There it is. All right. On delay.
My next one that I have here on my list is Good Will Hunting, which we did a review on. I've already said my thoughts on this. Elliot, you know, break my heart. Let's hear it.
This is number 7 for me. So, yeah, I feel like that's close enough. We can move it on. we can put on the list.
Let's go. Two hunting movies. Movies about hunting.
That's true. See, now I feel like we're getting a little soft. Like we're just putting anything on.
No, I think we're putting... Here's the thing. I think, and this is kind of why we did these list episodes anyway, is I always find it interesting when I read lists that I'm like, do all of you, like, surely not everyone here agreed that AI, artificial intelligence, was the best movie of the 2000s. And so I think this is an example of what I find interesting, that I'm, at least for me, I'm kind of, I could be overcorrecting, but I'm adjusting for, I think, us feeling the same about the movie is maybe more important than I'm going to sit here and argue till the cows come home about Quiz Show, a movie that we're way far apart on.
True. That's a good point.
That's just my opinion.
All right. Next up, I have The Truman Show. I don't know what number it is. My list is mangled beyond recognition. It's just the next one on the list.
Okay, well...
The Truman Show.
I have a proposition for you, Elliot.
Oh, boy.
Because... The next two movies I have on my list is I have Schindler's List and then The Truman Show. So I think at this point we should cut everything that's below here that we haven't talked about yet.
And okay, so that's La Haine, The Crow, and Toy Story 2.
Yeah. Unless you want to say something about, you know, I guess I will say, since... I haven't talked about The Crow, that I did really enjoy The Crow. I agree with a lot of the stuff you're saying. I do think it kind of comes down to just being an exercise in style more than something that I'm going to really love and get into. And it's not necessarily a style that I'm, like, over the moon about. I like your comparison to Watchmen. I think that's a good way of thinking of it. It felt a little bit more like a Metallica concert, which is not a place I ever want to be at.
Okay. Well, I guess in that spirit, La Haine is actually pretty close to the middle for me. I just thought it was kind of like Do the Right Thing if it was good.
Yeah.
I liked the movie, and I agreed with a lot of the stuff that you said about it. I didn't quite have the same reaction of like, oh, this is unbearably tense. And there were times where... I was like, I could tell that this was supposed to be really tense, but I was like, okay, I know that this is not the climax of the movie. Let's move on. I understand what's happening here. But yeah, that's like right on the line, is La Haye, and then everything underneath it. Yeah.
Okay. Well, Elliot, so it looks to me like we've got two spots left, and we have The Truman Show, Schindler's List, Galaxy Quest, and Boys in the Hood.
Well, obviously, my strongest vote is for Schindler's List.
All right. Well, then I have a offer. I say let's do Schindler's List and Galaxy Quest.
Interesting. Sure, that's fine with me. And it is sealed.
Wow. Yeah, read off our top 10 for the listening audience.
The Magellan's at the Movies top 10 best movies of the 90s in no particular order is 7, The Shawshank Redemption, Silence of the Lambs, Falling Down, American Beauty, Fargo, The Hunt for Red October, Good Will Hunting, Schindler's List, and Galaxy Quest. And as usual, let's say that this is the list of the our favorite movies that we have seen. So it's just our list. If your list is different, I say that's good. I say send it to us in an email. Let's compare notes.
Yeah. Yeah. This is, I mean, I'm, I'm pretty happy with this list.
I am too.
I think, once again, I feel like, have we had three Best Picture winners on all of our lists? Because we had The Hurt Locker, No Country for Old Men, and Chicago on the 2000s, and I'm struggling to recall the 2010s. That might have not had any Best Picture winners, actually. Now that I think about it, it probably didn't have any. But anyway, thank you so much for listening to this marathon of an episode. Hopefully you maybe took a break, or you're on a really long run or a long drive or something. But this was, as always, I really have a lot of fun with these episodes. I love being able to talk about movies I love, and I like arguing with Elliot and disparaging movies that he loves.
Yeah, and I like remembering that life is hard and full of disappointments.
Yeah, especially if you were alive in the 90s.
Actually, not especially. If you were alive in the 90s, then life was easy and full of good luck.
Anyway, thank you so much for listening. Yeah, like Elliot said, send us an email if you have a comment on a movie that we left off that you think is insane of us to leave off. What's if you're a quiz show head like I am, send us an email. But anyway, we're going to be back next week with a brand new review for a movie. We'll be back to our normal programming. So be sure to tune in for that. And we hope you're having a great new year, and just continue to have a great year as the weeks go.